Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we are, hour number 3, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Rich Orenberger, former Patriot, offensive lineman, Charger offensive lineman. He's a perfect guest for us today. Now, I was thinking about this watching the game last night. As those reporters for Buffalo are being kind of jerky to the players. There's a lot of jerky people in the media. There are very few jerky athletes. Sports is really weird. So we ask sports, if you really think about Joy Taylor's joining me, if you really think about what we ask pro athletes to do, I want you to think of yourself. Politicians are schmucks and jerks in their 50s. Reporters are jerks all the time. We ask professional athletes to be 23, 24, 25 years old, live away from everybody, play in a city they've never been to, give them more money than they know what to do with, be a public face, and they're overwhelmingly wonderful. You can count on one hand the jerks in pro sports that are like not good people. I watch that. I'm watching Mac Jones. Look at all the crap Tua got. Wonderful kid. Tua sits incredible up there. The average loser on Twitter, the average media person on Twitter, if you poke them in the ribs, they become apoplectic. Tua's getting beat up by guys like me. He's getting crushed by everybody. And he comes to the podium. He said, yes, sir.
Forget getting poked by us. On top of the fact that his job's in question every second. And possibly being traded in the middle of the season.
And here's Tua. Always goes to the microphone. Team guy. Good human being. Mac Jones. Josh Allen.
No, we're very self-important in the media. And
the kids are overwhelmingly wonderful.
Of us could not deal with somebody questioning everything about. Imagine if after every time we did a show, we then had to then go stand in front of a group of media members and answer questions about our performance on the show. Like, so when you mispronounced this name, was it because you didn't prep properly?
Were you embarrassed? Yeah. Play that bite again. Do we have that in the back? I mean, I have bad segments all the time, right? Like, right. I'm talking, I'm ad-libbing, whatever. When I have a bad segment, my management, they don't care. Like, they don't, you know, they understand the game. Fox gets the game. Not every game is perfect. Not every segment's perfect. But if I had a really bad segment, like I said something and it was really bad, my management would never come to me and ask if I was embarrassed. They would say, how do you feel about that? They'd let me talk my way out of it, defend myself or whatever. Like last night, these guys, Buffalo played their butt off. They played on a commercial fishing boat. That's the kind of weather it was. They busted their arse. They got hit in the mouth for 4 hours, where every hit in that kind of weather feels like you break a bone. And then after the game, a reporter asked this.
It's been over 40 years since a team has won a game passing that time.
I mean, what kind of
boy? What are we doing, bro?
What kind of question is that?
It's a question. The nation's gonna be criticizing you. Calling it.
All right. I think we keep 7 points.
Yeah,
14 to 10.
Is that the final score?
We made stops when we had to. They had one big run. I mean, they got good backs.
All right.
They kept coming back to a couple runs. I mean, I don't know how you want us to answer that question.
That's funny. I'll remember that.
It's a double down, actually.
I thought they handled it like total pros. Like, if somebody said, am I embarrassed? If some meatball reporter with a size 43 waist said to me, are you embarrassed? I'd say, I wouldn't be that kind. I'd be like, look at your slacks. You should be embarrassed. Well, I got no patience.
You know
I would
I'm
be a bad president. I can't hold my tongue. I'd rip guys.
No.
I'd be terrible.
No. But it's really, even reporters, and being a reporter is a very hard job.
No, it ain't that tough.
It's not.
It's not that hard.
Look, I'm not going to say that. It is hard to be a reporter. It is hard to ask the same questions every single press conference because your editor is bugging you.
I'll tell you what's hard. Put a shovel in his hand and ask him to dig a ditch.
Okay, yes. Obviously, relatively speaking, we are not digging ditches here. But don't double down on it. When you see that this is a reaction, you can change how you ask the question. Like, you can apologize and say, I'm sorry. Embarrassing is not the right word. How do you guys feel about how the game played out? Like, how do you feel that about that statistic?
That really bothered me watching that. That really bothered me.
Well, we ask a lot from these athletes. And we want nice responses to our questions. And we want to get good sound bites. And there just needs to be a little bit of grace in that space.
Know the temperature of the room. We bring players on all the time. And very rarely I have to ask them a tough question. They did controversy. And I got to ask a question. I don't want to jam it down their throat. I know, you know, listen, it's hard. That bothered me. Like, I'm not saying athletes are perfect, right? Like, they're young, they're rich, they're good looking. Folks, if you're young, rich, good looking, and a public figure, if you don't think these kids are going to step in it occasionally, they're going to smoke a joint, they're going to get in a relationship and do something dumb on Instagram. You're 54 doing dumb stuff. I'm 57 doing dumb stuff. But that, I don't know why that bothered me. It really bothered me how we treated these guys. And I'm not a butt kisser. I mean, you know, I'll go after guys. I've said before, Baker Mayfield, sorry to mention his name. You're welcome right here. Westbrook, I'll bring on anybody that I've criticized. But so I don't get off on, I think I always feel like I feel we're lucky to have as many good people as we do. Last two times I've had Justin Herbert on, the minute the interview's over, I get a text from him. Thank you, sir. It's so nice of you to think of me. I'm like, are you kidding me? All people do yell at me all day on Twitter. I bring this star quarterback on. He's like, thank you, sir. And I'm like, I'm in a mood today. I'm in a fatherly mood that we are very, very lucky in our business to overwhelmingly have good guys and great women and men. So occasionally, if a male tennis star throws a racket, he's pissed. Understand it. If a female tennis player says, I don't want to take your questions. They're athletes. I get it. Like, it's okay. They have a right to be mad. They put up with a lot. They got a towel wrapped around him. You jamming a microphone in. They just played in a nor'easter. At least if they prep all week for a game, then ask a better question than putting embarrassed in there. Am I being a jerk? I feel like I'm being a jerk.
No,
I don't care.
And they were clearly bothered by
it. If I'm going to prepare for 4 hours to play on a commercial fishing boat, then you better have your questions ready to go. Not say, are you embarrassed? That's a trigger word.
Yeah, it's not the right word to use. But even if you use the wrong word, when you see that is the reaction, it is also okay to apologize if you've clearly offended someone and just say, I apologize. Embarrassing is not the right word. How did you feel about that statistic? Or what could you have done differently to force them to throw the ball more or something like that?
Something I say probably too much is if I'm going to ask a tough question, I always say, like, let's say you just went through a bad spot.
Yeah.
And I'd say, okay, let's say you're Micah Hyde. And I said, Joy, Micah Hyde, you have a hyphenated name. You know, they didn't throw much and they kept going after you on the run. And, you know, how's that land for you? Like in this moment, like they didn't even try to run. They just said, we're going to run right at you over and over for 3 hours. How's that land for you?
Yeah. I mean,
open door.
That's what that question was phrased in a way where you can actually answer it respectfully.
Yeah. Like, I'm opening the door for you.
Because it is factual that they ran the ball the entire game. Mac Jones threw it three times.
How about frustrated? Are you frustrated?
Frustrated
they didn't even
is a
attempt
much better word.
To rush the ball.
Frustrated is a much softer word.
Yeah. It's just words matter.
Yeah.
Okay. If they have to prep for 4 hours and memorize 13 defenses, you can write down a couple of questions. It's not that hard. I used to be the guy that asked those questions. I never once felt I got a couple people to cry. You know, I asked Jerry Tarkanian a question and he got very emotional. That was always a win for me if I could get you to emote. But I don't think I ever had anybody that was mad. Charles Barkley once made fun of my shoes. I had a few of those. Mike Tyson ignored me more than once, but I'm on a soapbox here. A little soapbox today.
You're allowed to be on a soapbox.
All right. Because the rest of my life is amazing right now. My wife's out of town, so that's not good. But I got USC's got a coach. The Miami Hurricanes got a coach. I mean, this is the best my life's ever been. Belichick's driving people crazy. Brady's going to end up in a Super Bowl. I mean, it's literally my sports life right now is almost perfect.
No, I agree with you. I think we are really in a great place with sports. The athletes do an incredible job of dealing with not just us in the media, but also social media and an onslaught of coverage of every single thing that they do. And for the most part, they are incredibly gracious and thoughtful and responsive and patient and all the things that I would definitely not be. And I'm always impressed with.
I mean, that social media is a loaded gun, man. You can make one little mistake and say one thing. And I see media people do it all day. And then we crush kids when they do it. It's like, I always had kind of a rule. I regret my 20s. I'd like to apologize to anybody who I offended in my 20s.
Yes.
Can you imagine being rich, good-looking, and foisted in the public eye in your 20s? Oh, my God.
No, I was only good-looking, and I was a nightmare. That was for Twitter. They're going to love
all
that
right.
one.
I had to get this off my chest.
No, they do an incredible job. They do a much better job than we would do. Imagine we just finished the show for 3 hours, right? And I'm sitting here in a heated blanket with my coffee. Like, again, we're not digging dishes. But we're tired after talking for 3 hours.
I am.
And then immediately we have to go and talk to 15 media members who are disappointed in our performance. And we have to explain this segment where we, you know, misquoted this guy's resume and said he was at a different school than he was.
I wouldn't be.
And we can't respond with, well, we just did a 3-hour live show, so occasionally we're going to make a mistake. No, we have to very graciously
First of
calmly
all,
answer
football,
the question.
Football, you're being tackled.
Yeah.
LeBron's not being tackled. You know, all these great baseball players. Mike Trout's not being tackled. So there's a physical violence to football, which gets into your head. Sometimes you're hurt. You almost always come into a game. You're hurt somewhere. It's imperfect. And then you add a nor'easter into it. I mean, Stephon Diggs literally looked like a center fielder who lost a ball in the lights. He turned left. He turned right. Like the ball was. Did you see the video? I don't know who had the video of a kicker before the game kicking a field goal and it exit stage right. Like this is a game as a media member. I'm like, I would come in with a sense of humor almost. Listen, is that the hardest game you've ever played? You literally play. Is this the hardest game you've ever played? And they're probably even the losing team would. You know, have a pretty funny answer about it because it was weird. It was a weird game. I thought it was incredibly entertaining.
I think it was a great, like, one of the all-time wins for Bill Belichick. I don't think I'm being hyperbolic there. Like, this is the Buffalo Bills, who are, we assume, going to be at the top of the division for a decade after Tom Brady left. Here are the Patriots, back again, great and winning any way they want to. On the road, in a snowstorm.
It was great.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Celtics-Lakers tonight, Discover Card key matchup. If you're a valued customer, you deserve a simple gesture of appreciation from your credit card company. Learn more at discover.com/match. Limitations apply. Well, he was an offensive lineman in the NFL, and he was picked up by the Patriots out of Penn State. So he knows that culture in New England. Rich Ornberger, also a radio host, popular radio host in San Diego. So offensive linemen love run blocking. You looked at this, and you probably played in a few of these 25-mile-an-hour nor'easters. When you're watching New England last night, it was like an offensive lineman's dream.
Oh, my God. Well, let's start with the run game. Yeah, from that perspective, that's an absolute dream. You want to run the football all game long because you're the aggressor. You know, when you're pass protecting, while it looks like the offense is attacking the offensive linemen, we're in retreat. You know, we're reacting to what the defense is coming to us with. And that's panic mode, man. When you get to just run the football and get out there and just, you know, bang heads together, that's exactly what you want. However, that environment, playing in those gusting winds and that wind chill, man, I'm glad I'm sitting here with you dressed as like a substitute teacher instead of out there doing that still.
Well, it's interesting. If you start looking around the league right now, I was saying this, Kansas City's good, but it's their defense. Washington and Miami are hot. It's their defense. New England doesn't even have to throw the ball. It is funny, Rich, that December football, it's pretty in September. It's ugly in December, and every year we fall for this stuff. A lot of the teams now that are winning, it's just ugly football. Like, that's what I love last night, but it's like the team that had no artistic expression, and I'm seeing it all over the league.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, this is how every season starts and finishes. We all say, like, oh my goodness, do you see X, Y, or Z? They're throwing the ball over the place. They got all the weapons on the outside. Well, all of a sudden, all of the football that's being played close to the sidelines, it gets real close to the middle of the field when the weather gets bad. And it's because those are the high percentage plays. That's how you know you're going to keep possession of the football, handing it off instead of throwing it to the sidelines. That's how you know that you're going to make a high percentage throw over the middle if you can get an open receiver. Those throws are tougher because there's more people in that space, but the teams who do that better and defend the part of the field in that high percentage area better are the teams that generally have the most success. And to your point, the Chiefs, the reason why they're coming on late, it's predicated around their defense. Since week six, the stat is they now lead the league in scoring defense since week six. Now, they started awful on defense, but they've really recovered nicely. And that's the reason why they're looking better, because that's what you need later in the season.
So you've had one, two, three, four. You've had four different current head coaches were coaches for you at some point in your career. So I'm going to give you each of them, and you give me, you know, a 30, 40 second rundown on what made them successful. So let's start with Belichick. What's his secret sauce?
Experience. I mean, just look around the league. How many coaches have coached for as long as he has and with success? And he does it all. It's not just the head coaching standpoint. It's general managing. He's building these rosters. He's constructing everything. He's in complete control of the culture. And it's because he can. And it's because he doesn't have to worry like a young coach learning for the first time where the bathrooms are in the facility. Like, he knows where all the nooks and crannies are around Gillette Stadium. He can just concentrate on his culture. And so it's his experience that makes him excellent. And nobody can duplicate that, because you have to coach in this league for that long. And typically it requires you to be successful to coach in the league this long.
Once again, Brian Flores is winning games. I see you had him as a special teams coach in New England. What's his secret sauce?
He's not afraid, like you were just talking about and throughout the show today, to win ugly. I mean, he doesn't care what Tua's stats look like. He doesn't care if you run the ball for only 30 yards and you pass it for 200 and you win the football game. Just win. Like, at the end of the day, this isn't a beauty pageant. It's who has the most W's, who has the least L's, and who has control of their division at the end of the football season. And he's gotten a lot of that coming off of the Bill Belichick coaching tree. We saw that last night in Buffalo. You know, Bill Belichick and the Patriots ran the football the majority of the game. They threw it three times. They didn't care if it looked bad. They just wanted to win. And Brian Flores has a lot of that in there. He doesn't mind having those ugly, mucky games. And he, you could say whatever you want about Tua. As long as he's a winning quarterback, that's the most important quality that he sees in a starting quarterback. And I think it's aided them.
You had Frank Reich, now the Colts quarterback coach. You had him twice. What's his sauce? What's his specialty?
I've never been around a better leader of men than Frank Reich. When he speaks, I mean, a pin could drop in the room. And you're talking about a bunch of 21, 22 to 30-year-old men who have egos and are passionate about the things they're passionate about. I've never seen somebody command a room the way he does. It's incredible. And you believe everything he says. He walks the walk. We're going to take risks on offense because I believe in you. And then all of a sudden you're on the field going, my coach believes in me. And he, like I said, he practices what he preaches. What he says in the meeting room happens on the field. And he's made a believer out of Carson Wentz again. He's made me a believer in Carson Wentz. That's a guy who's managing football games, and he was left on the scrap heap a year ago. I mean, he's just an incredible leader, a captivating speaker, and I think that's a really important part of being a head coach, is being a great orator, a great public speaker.
And finally, a guy I'll be honest, begrudging respect, I think he's really playing to his personnel. Nick Sirianni, who you had as a Charger coach on that staff, I had my doubts. He wasn't good at the podium. He wasn't a good orator. But I'll tell you this, he knows what he's got. He leans into it. What was his, you know, specialty? What impressed you?
Nick Sirianni is a sponge. One of the things that I remember watching as he was a quarterback's coach working with Philip Rivers is how much he was willing to learn from his player. There are so many coaches who walk into a room, they put their little visor on, they have the pencil behind their ear, and they tell you how we're going to win football games. He realized that Philip Rivers was the guy who had been in that room in the wars for all these years, and he was willing to learn. That is so important. To be a great leader, you first need to be a great servant. And so he sat in that room and allowed Philip Rivers to teach him everything he knew about football. And with no ego, he absorbed that. And then he's able to relay what he has learned in the past to the football field. And he's creative enough to find what's great about players and hide some of their limitations. And we're seeing that with Jalen Hurts in that Eagles offense, and really Gardner Minshew a week ago.
For the record, San Diego, of course, where you broadcast, big Chargers town, they still have some fans there. Your takeaway on Justin Herbert, I mean, when I look at that Chargers team now, I just think big play. Big Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, Justin Herbert. What do you make of him?
I think he is unbelievable, man. He's thrilling to watch. I'm excited to continue watching his career. They need to protect him better. They need to get that offensive line right. They got it right in the draft with Slater. He might be an all-pro offensive lineman every year from here on out. He's incredible. But they got to stay healthy up front and protect him. But the thing that I like about him the most is he has the shortest memory of any player I've ever seen. He hits the backspace on that last player, that last drive, so fast. He's in the moment, man. Like, he can do that. And that poise you often don't see until year 5, year 6, year 8 with a starting quarterback in the NFL. He's got it already. And I think that's the reason why he's so successful. Yeah, you may pick him off. You may run it back to the house, but he's coming right back after you. And he trusts his abilities, and he has the ability, which is important as well. But it's his poise, Colin. He's unreal for this level, only in year 2.
6 years in the league. Rich Orenberger, big popular radio host as well in San Diego. Great seeing you. Way to go, buddy. Thanks for coming on again.
You got it, Colin. Anytime.
You bet. He knows the Patriot way. Yeah, they used to have was it Dante Scarnecchia was their offensive line coach in New England that was legendary. And I remember going online YouTubing Dante Scarnecchia, and he would have these sessions where he taught coaches how to coach offensive linemen. He's got a couple of them on YouTube. And he's not a big guy, but I remember one of the things he always talked about, New England does this well. He says, even in pass blocking, be the aggressor. Initiate contact. Make it physical. Like, pass blocking doesn't have to be all back, 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 back. And when you watch, like, I thought Buffalo would win last night, but it became very clear early. It's just, they're and it's funny about this. Fans are different. You couldn't get Los Angeles to fill a football stadium with that weather last night. Phoenix, it's just not who we are. We're more comfortable, right? So when you grow up in harsh weather conditions, or, like, I've known a lot of guys that are from Boston, and people from Boston just talk crap. It's almost a badge of honor to be made fun of from your friends. It's like, it's just, you go to a bar when you're young, you're watching your teams, you're all in, you're emotional. Goodwill Hunting is so Boston it hurts, and written by two Boston guys. And there is something about New England and Foxborough, it is, you have to sacrifice with Bill. The culture is one of sacrifice. I mean, think about being a quarterback and being told, it's going to be kind of embarrassing, but you're not going to throw tonight. Even if you have a bonus tied to it. I was talking to Emmanuel Acho during the break, and he said, imagine going to a wide receiver and saying, next couple of weeks, we're not going to throw the ball to you. We need you to block only. And you win, but it's like, come on, I'm fast and I can catch. Like, asking Mac Jones not to throw. Could you ask Brett Favre to do that? I don't believe you could. But it's part of the kind of when I lived in the Northeast, you sacrifice for weather. You just understand winter's going to be rough.
But that's the culture there.
And it's the weather's perfect for it. The principled nature of New England, it's always been kind of a, you know, fences make good neighbors. It's almost like it's a perfect culture for New England.
But that's what's made them consistently so good. When you know what you are and you can bring in players and evaluate players.
And they know it before they get there.
Right. It's similar to, I was just talking about this yesterday, the Spurs. Like, there's a type of player, there's a type of coach, type of personnel that is a Spur. because that's their culture. They want these kind of characteristics right. in this player, in this coach, for you to fit into this culture. The culture is not going to fit for you. You're going to come and you're going to be a puzzle piece to what we already have going on.
And you know you have a strong brand when people know the culture before they're in the building.
And it doesn't work for everybody.
Like Alabama and New England. Everybody knows the culture. Nick's loud. Nick's intense. Nick asks a lot. Every day is competitive. You know New England. If you want the most money, this is not where you come. You want to win the most, we're the place. But you got to get over yourself. And so I think it's much easier to ask Mac Jones, hey, made him number 50 in camp. It's much easier to ask Mac Jones, we're not going to throw tonight. It's just understood. Yeah, Tom Brady was the best player in the league, never the highest paid. In fact, most of his career, not top five. It's easier to ask something if everybody knows the culture going in. Much easier to ask. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, let's stick with that. The Patriots got the win over the Bills despite only throwing the ball three times. And Mac Jones said the entire offense deserves praise for the win.
For the offensive line to do what they did was incredible. And they deserve all the credit in the world. And Josh for calling the plays that he called, knowing the environment and knowing that we knew that we were going to be able to run the ball. And the running backs ran hard, Ramondre, Damian, and B. So you couldn't ask for better effort from those guys. And it was just a crazy game to be a part of. But we knew if we didn't turn the ball over, we'd be good. So it was just a weird day. But at the end of the day, you just get more points than the other team, and it's a great day.
He's just a nice boy, young boy.
I know. I love it. I actually like being wrong about Mac Jones.
I have no problem with it.
I have no problem being wrong about Mac Jones.
Listen, the only losers when a quarterback underachieves is not only the local fan base, it's us.
Right.
Like at Fox, we want every young quarterback to be great. So all the games are fantastic because nobody wants to watch the Houston Texans and the Jags. Now, the Jags have their quarterback, right. But it's a bad team. Like, we are always rooting for all the quarterbacks to be home runs.
I love it. And he's right. The offensive line gave it a tremendous performance last night. He wasn't sacked and wasn't pressured at all last night. It's his first game this season without facing a single quarterback pressure, which is remarkable considering the fact that they ran the ball the entire time. So you knew what they were doing, and they still weren't able to stop them. They rushed for 222 yards and one touchdown. And, of course, stat line that will go down in history. Mac Jones, 2 for 3, 19 passing yards, 0 touchdowns. But as he mentioned, 0 interceptions, which is, I'm positive, what they emphasize with him in that type of game, in that environment. Don't turn the ball over and we'll be good. So with that win, the Patriots move to the top seed in the AFC playoff race, and they are on a bye this week. Time is a flat circle. The Patriots are running the AFC again. What are you going to do? So Daniel Jones got more tests on his injured neck yesterday. According to Adam Schefter, the results indicated that Jones is unlikely to play Sunday against the Chargers. So Mike Glennon, who started in Sunday's loss against the Dolphins, is now in concussion protocol and might not be able to play. So that would leave Jake Fromm, who just arrived off the practice squad, as the only healthy quarterback remaining on the roster. And that is bleak for the New York Giants, especially at this point in the season.
Listen, I'm kind of a give Joe Judge another year guy, but you are getting to a point with them. We're going to play this game tomorrow. You've been here and you've heard me say this. I'll never judge a coach on his first year. Like you're building a cult. You can't judge any business on the first year. But by the middle of the second year, I don't even need a lot of wins. You've got to have an identity. I have to watch you and go, oh, I see what you're trying to do. You just don't have personnel. Like
you're actually more patient than I am there. I think by this point in the season, even if it's your first year, we should start to see something from you. It doesn't have to be necessarily wins. You don't have to be blowing teams out, but you should start to see some drops of what it is, the culture that you're trying to build.
Like
there.
What are they offensively? Saquon Barkley's not the same player. Daniel Jones was a reach.
Only fired their offensive coordinator, so.
I mean, what are they? Kenny Golladay is probably a great two. He's not you paid him like a one. He's probably a great two. Evan Ingram's good, but I keep waiting for the next level. I never get it. The offensive line, you're in year four of the rebuild. Like, come on, you can't. They spent big money in free agency. It took the Chargers 1 year to rebuild their O-line. 1 year. You're on year four. It's still a mess.
I think that I think teams like Philadelphia and Detroit are kind of an indictment of the Giants because, and I'm not getting crazy here, they won one game, obviously, yeah. but we can see what Detroit is trying to build.
Absolutely.
And they've been in close games. They don't have the personnel.
But they play hard. There's a little – when DeAndre Swift is healthy and they're running the ball, I can see what they're trying to do offensively.
And we already know what Jared Goff is. We've seen enough of Jared Goff yeah. in his career. He needs an immense amount of protection. He has to be comfortable. So that's a given. Like, we're not trying to figure out what Jared Goff is going to be yeah. in the Lions system. There's one way Jared Goff plays yeah. that is successful. We've seen that. But you have to be able to see something. Stefanski with the Browns. An extremely dysfunctional organization for a long time. Like, you have to be able to see some, at least some culture stuff in the first year. You might not be winning a lot. You might not be blowing people out or getting the performances out of all your rookies that you want, but you should see some culture build. It's, I don't know. I don't think they're going to move on from Joe Judge, but they're going to move on from somebody there.
Yep.
So Justin Fields has missed the last two games with cracked ribs, and it remains up in the air if he will play against the Packers this week. Head coach Matt Nagy said the Bears are never going to put him at risk medically, and that the team is having an ongoing discussion of his availability over the next coming days. He was limited in practice last week and said pain tolerance will be a big factor in their conversations. The last time he played was November 21st against the Ravens. So while that is taking place, I'll also make sure Andy Dalton is ready to go because he took some hard hits against Arizona. He was sacked three times, 63.4 completion percentage, 54.9 passer rating. And they are 12.5-point underdogs, are the Bears, against the Packers on Sunday night. Packers coming off of a bye, according to Fox Bet. So that could get ugly really quickly if both Justin Fields and Andy Dalton aren't available for that game. I'm assuming that Andy Dalton will, but they're just evaluating him moving forward. Again, the Bears is another situation that we're going to be paying close attention to this offseason. This is a big divisional matchup that they are 12.5-point underdogs.
Listen, the Giants, the Eagles, and the Jets have multiple first-round picks up at the top of the draft. So in this league, you could this is the league of hope. You can turn stuff around.
Yeah, you got to hit your draft picks.
Go look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Their first four picks – they got a running back who's the future, a tight end who's a star, two offensive linemen both starting. I mean, it's like their offense, if you noticed, as the season's gone on, like last year at the end of the year and the beginning of this year, it was hopeless. It's not that hopeless. Like they Benzel, if you gave them a dynamic quarterback, even like a Jimmy Garoppolo, like somebody in their physical prime, Pittsburgh could win playoff games. Like, they're not that – you can get stuff right in this league.
You have to really hit your young talent.
Absolutely. That's what you do. You got to hit some young – look at Dallas. Defense was a mess. They hit on Micah, Trayvon Diggs, an interior lineman.
It's a salary cap league, so you're going to pay your stars. If you hit your young talent, you're going to be a contender.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Hushmanzada and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
So we're going to play a game here, fill in or franchise quarterback. Joy is going to give me quarterbacks that are 26 years old or younger. We had a couple of them on display last night. Do I think they're franchise guys I'd build around, or for the time being they're fine, but I've got my eye on upgrades the minute I have a chance? Here we go.
First up is 23-year-old Mac Jones, franchise quarterback or fill-in?
He's a franchise quarterback because he fits what they want. They don't ask their quarterback to throw sidearm, have a cape. 8 games with a passer rating over 95, efficient, doesn't make mistakes. Say what you want. He looks like a young Brady. This system is big on defense, special teams, and efficiency. That's what he delivers.
Next up, 25-year-old Josh Allen.
He's a franchise guy. Listen, folks, he's not hit his ceiling. The last 3 years, he's gotten better in completion percentage, passing yards, TD passes, and passer rating. So he wasn't the problem last night. Like, the problem was they struggled at times to stop the run. He's as good as any of these young guys.
All right, let's stay in the AFC. Tua Tagovailoa, 23 years old.
He feels like a fill-in. Here's why. Health is an issue. Only one win this year over a team with a winning record. You can win game. Tim Tebow won 7 straight games in this league. And he's averaging 197 yards passing in his 2 years. Like, I feel like he's a little bit like a left-handed Mac Jones, but Mac is a little more consistent without the health concerns. And I think they're still going to get into potentially Deshaun Watson trade stuff.
How about Zach Wilson, 22 years old?
To me, I think he's a fill-in. I don't think he's accurate. I think he shows off when he plays. You can look at him there. He doesn't have a big body, a ton of mistakes, which, again, he's a young quarterback. But Robert Saleh twice has had to go to the podium and kind of say, you don't have to show off. He's just not accurate enough. It's a Sam Darnold issue. He completes 58% of his throws. I don't care if you're a rookie. That's not good enough.
Lamar Jackson, 24.
He's a franchise quarterback. He's going through a rut. So is Mahomes, by the way. He gives you 330 yards a game. They're not conventional yards, but everybody goes through ruts. Justin Herbert, by the way, had a 3-game, little bit of a slump about a month ago. Now he's out of it. So you grow, you ascend, you plateau, you grow, you ascend. He's fine.
Joe Burrow, 24 years old.
Franchise quarterback. One of the things I like about Joe, he averages 8.3 yards per attempt in the NFL. That's third best in the league without a great O-line. What I like about Joe is he's got a short memory. He's really an old school guy. He's very much like the comp I gave to him, Tony Romo. Now, I think he's a better thrower of the football than Tony Romo. But there's a lot of playmaker. He's going to make some mistakes. He's going to throw some picks. But I think he's got just the right amount of confidence / ego with it also being humble.
Joe or Baker Mayfield.
Again, he's not accurate enough. He's a fill-in. He ranks 44th out of 50 qualified quarterbacks in completion percentage since he entered the league. He is simply too inconsistent throwing the football. I have maturity issues. And by the way, he's smaller than I want. And he's beat up a lot.
22-year-old Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, you're also with him seeing improvement, too. One pick in the last 5 games. That is with slow, skilled people and a bad O-line and a rookie head coach. So, again, a lot of picks early. But if you really watch them play, he's not the issue. They have to draft speed. They are slow. And, I mean, they have so little depth that they can hang with teams for about a half, and then they're shot. They led Arizona at half. They play with Denver for a half. They play with everybody for a half, and they have no depth. They needed like 9 new starters in free agency in the draft.
26-year-old Patrick Mahomes.
Franchise quarterback. He's got the highest. He's going through a dip. He's plateaued. Highest quarterback rating in league history. A special talent. Folks, Peyton Manning had a bad year 4. The good news is he's not cocky. He's totally coachable. He's got a good culture. He'll be fine, but he's got to find himself. Andy Reid talked about it the other day. He's just got to find himself. He's like, we're good on script. We're fine on script, totally coachable, and then we're not as consistent enough. He'll find his way.
23-year-old Justin Herbert.
I mean, folks, he is 11 career games with 3-plus touchdown passes in his first 2 years. Only Dan Marino's done that. And remember, his first year, they had a tragic offensive line. This year, he's got better protection. But he was doing that behind an offensive line that is a shell of what this year's O-line is.
All right, moving on to the NFC. 23-year-old Jalen Hurts, franchise quarterback or fill-in?
I'm going to go franchise quarterback. Folks, all I know is this. Leads all quarterbacks in the league with 8 rushing touchdowns. 21 total TDs and 8 picks. This is the first time he's been banged up. It doesn't look like everybody else. He does not throw a great deep ball. But this offense is a handful. And I'll say this. He's productive. They lead the NFL by a mile in running the football. I've said this all season. It's hard to get my arms around it. He doesn't throw the ball deep. But it feels like there's something about his energy. They are productive when he's on the field.
24-year-old Daniel Jones, franchise or fill-in?
He's a fill-in. He's not accurate enough. He's never had a year where he completes 65% of his throws. By the way, he wasn't accurate at Duke with David Cutcliffe. So it's my knocking him out of college was, if you have a great offensive coach in college in the bad ACC, and you're really a six pick, you got to be in the 70% completion percentage, even if you're limited. I don't think his limitations are physical. There's something about his throwing motion. He's simply not accurate enough at distributing the football.
Justin Fields, 22 years old.
I mean, we don't have much to work on, but when he's played and had time, playmaker, big arm, says the right stuff at the podium, looks the part.
That team now, half of that team's not even, can't play. They're all banged up.
Sam Darnold.
He's a fill-in. Again, not accurate enough throwing the football. And he's hurt a lot because he's a reckless player. Sam, too many pick sixes, too many injuries. And some of this league is real simple. Like, this is where Mac Jones is good. This is where Tua excels. Have ball, open receiver, deliver ball right on the spot. Sam struggles with that.
24-year-old Kyler Murray.
Yeah, he's a starter. I think he's the hardest guy to defend in the league, including Aaron Rodgers. I don't know. You just have to bake in. He will humiliate your defense about six times during a game.
Well, who did we have? Was it Kenny Young that said he's so hard to defend because he's quick and then he stops?
Also, because of his size.
And his stride is not long.
He's hard to see behind the offensive line. I mean, I'm serious here. He's hard to see. When he's sitting in that pocket, if you're a linebacker or a safety, it is hard to see. And then he flies out of the offensive line. He's a fun one. That's the best watch in the league. All right. Good stuff for Joy and Ryan on a Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow. It's The Herd.